You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, it's only late afternoon and I'm already exhausted after the bombardment I've had from different events worldwide. And I don't even want to talk about Trump today because he comes fourth on the list. First on the list is something I've never heard of before, DeepSeek. I mean, it's come from nowhere. It's a China startup, and yet it's disrupted markets. And it's extraordinary. Had you heard of it before?
It's been in the market for a few months, the story that there was a startup which is making things, which has been done at a lot cheaper rate. You know, so the app has been around. I think what might have prompted the story is that all of a sudden it's the top-loaded app on Apple.
Okay.
And it's displaced ChatGPT. So I think that also drew attention to it. And, you know, once the media get hold of a story like that, I don't want to say they blow it out, but they start talking about it and it raises questions. And to be fair, I think we've had a tech market that's been very fragile. You know, there are a lot of questions about generative AI and where it's going, the amount of spend, will people get their investment back? Is it slowing down? Is it not slowing down? Is there competition for NVIDIA and, you know, those kind of, can they maintain their margin? So, I mean, every day there are questions around tech, you know, having had such an incredible ride and also with so much promise. So it's not surprising that the response and reaction is coming the way it has. And the one thing that you have to understand about these markets is that, you know, you've got a lot of traders out there. When they smell a story, you know, when they see a shark in the water, you know,
yes,
they take full advantage and they create fear and panic. And I think so a lot of the selling is around that. And no one's had a chance to give any deep information. You know, listening to the stories all day, it's all supposition. It's all the same kind of stuff, you know, and people giving the same kind of arguments, but there's nothing substantive about it. How strong is it? You know, can it? Yes, it's cheap and it's open AI, it's open source. So they've got hold of it, they've added, they used other chips, they've used efficient software, but you don't know whether it can stand up to some of the more robust systems. So I think there's a lot of media talk, there's a lot of talk, but you can't get anything juicy. You can't get your teeth into any argument.
Where does it get its chips from? This is this is it. Is it an entirely China-based company?
Yes.
So it doesn't import anything from the United States or America.
No.
Because I noticed ASML, for example, this morning when I was looking at it briefly, it was down 8%. But so it's had an enormous knock-on effect. Have you looked at the DeepSeek website? Do you know what it does? Where does it get its stuff? And is it comparable to the products and the services that you've been used to for the last year and a half or so?
I don't think so. We tried it out this morning. It was pretty slow. You know, in other words, the responses took a long time to come through. What it is that, and I'm no technology expert, you need Viv in a situation like this, where obviously when it's open source, anybody can get hold of it. So they start to work on whatever architecture's there already. You know, they start adding on. They don't have to start from scratch. But I think what has happened, as far as I can understand, is that, okay, so they're using a lot of less powerful chips, GNUs, and, you know, put them all together, thousands of them together, but through the use of more efficient software, in other words, code, they're able to kind of get the best benefit out of it and produce a decent product. So I think the benefit, and this is where the arguments come through, is that it's cheaper and it will be cheaper for companies to use this to introduce AI models. In other words, they don't have to spend a huge amount of money, you know, on more expensive models that are offered by other companies and that. So I think this is where perhaps the benefit comes. But in a way, that in fact increases AI. This is not the end of generative AI. This is the beginning. You know, it just means that it's becoming more accessible to, it will become more accessible to people to use on their various apps and so on.
There's two ways to look at this. You can say to yourself, oh, well, you know, as you've said, you've tested it this morning. It's slower than the services that you've been used to for a while. And so therefore it will go away. It's just a moment in time. You can also say that the other AI stocks, AI link stocks were overpriced. So they were ripe for the picking for the bears. But on the other hand, it also says another thing. The barriers to entry are not that robust. Yes. In other words, there might be another DeepSeek coming in the next few months, for example.
All of the above. You know, all of the above. And remember that ChatGPT is only 2 years old.
Hmm.
You know, I don't know, the development might be, but it's 2 years old. And like any other technology, you know, as time goes by, other leaders start to emerge. And just talking about portfolio, you know, about our portfolios, you know, the one issue that I've been raising and saying, okay, stay with what we've got, but don't be arrogant. Don't fall back on, you know, in other words, keep looking for new emerging businesses. Are there any? Is there going to be competition? So you've got to keep your eye open for anything like that. You know, you can't just take things that, you know what I mean? You can't just take things for granted.
Yes.
You've got to keep looking and watching. And we can't just dismiss this. Okay. Is it going to have a big effect on ASML? Is it going to have a big effect on NVIDIA and their chips? You know, can you do away with them? Can you have a lesser chip? One that doesn't use so much electricity or generate so much heat, you know, those kind of questions. And I think this will emerge with time. I think the one thing that we were conscious of and aware of is that over time, chips would get cheaper. In other words, powerful chips would get cheaper and, you know, new companies would emerge. So I don't think this is maybe the start. This is just a firing a shot above our heads. I think the other thing, Lindsay, and I want to stress this, is this, you know what? This is a big lesson to the West Wing, you know, this is a big lesson to Mr. Trump and all those chaps who are hanging on around him. When you start to get like you've got, and this is to Biden as well, when you stop China getting chips and you stop countries, they work around it.
Yes.
They will find a solution, you know, which has happened in this case. Okay, what have we got? How can we use it in that to get to this solution? So I think it's a big lesson that, you know, with sanctions and that. And what do? You create innovative technology or you create innovation. Just if you look at countries like South Africa, I remember when we were isolated and we were, you know, they were fighting the war '70s and '80s against Frelimo and so on. They created their own arms industry because they couldn't import arms. They built them from scratch with technology. You know, I'm not commending them. This is Danel. And what happened is they had to do it if they wanted to protect the Israeli army as well. Israeli technology was built out of sanctions against them, you know, because they couldn't get arms or anything.
I think the phrase you're looking for, David, sorry to interrupt you, is necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes, in a simple old
in
way.
In every single sense, whether it be a chip, whether it be an arms manufacturer or whatever. If you need to do something and you've got the people to do it, then you will do it. It will be created, and that is what is happening. Does it change your view towards the companies you already hold? Probably not.
Well, we don't know. You know, they've already been there've been question marks about how much they're spending, how much they're going to spend. They will continue to do so. They will continue to build out data centers, and the whole issue is, well, what do we need in those data centers? You know. Can we find an innovative way to get the same results with less expense? So I think these are questions that are going to be asked. This that we're seeing at the moment, I don't know how long it'll last, the knee-jerk reaction that we've seen today. Mm. Is it going to knock ASML out of business? Probably not.
Definitely not.
It's become an absolutely you know, when you punch someone, like a punching bag for tech, and it's such a good business, you know what I mean? It's such a superb business that makes these incredible machines. But every time you think that they're going to print, you know, they're going to be less semiconductors made, of course they get hammered. And NVIDIA's the other one, a huge successful company, massively successful. You know, you can't blame them that people drive the share price up, but they also become a punch bag for the industry. You know, let's show them. And they get, there's quite a bit of joy when this happens in the market. You know, there you are, you know. Tall poppy syndrome, you know.
Yeah.
These are wonderful businesses. You know, I'm not saying the share price. I'm just saying these are wonderful business, wonderful, innovative businesses.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's see what happens. Let's see if this is just a knee-jerk reaction, because a lot of the stocks that we've been speaking about for so long have gone to elevated levels, and everyone was sanguine and complacent about them.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is a very welcome phrase, but wake-up call, and say, yeah, nothing ever continues in a straight line. So watch out and diversify your portfolios and be careful. So that's it. Second thing, the expropriation bill in South Africa. I mean, we all knew about it.
Yeah.
But during the dark hours of last night, or dark hours in Northern Europe, suddenly I get this message saying, well, it's been signed into law or something.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
important? Is it bad for foreign sentiment towards South Africa?
There's been a similar bill since 1975, but I think that I'm not quite sure. This is a political issue. You know, this has been something that they've discussed for a long time. They're trying to couch it and say, well, it's not serious. You know, we'll only take land if it hasn't been used, if it's dangerous, or, you know, all kinds of issues like that. But it's there. You know, effectively how they use it, that's the big problem. I think what's worrying is that this is supposed to be a government of national unity. The other parties never knew about it.
Exactly. You know, that's the thing. The GNU has suddenly started to fragment.
They just say, you're signing it. You know, can't you discuss it with us? And I think there's a very strong message as well. They're partners, but they're not partners. You know, they don't respect the government of national unity. They don't respect that, yes, we're heavyweight. We've got 40% of the vote. You know, we only needed a couple of people to come with us to control the government, or to be, you know, to be in control. But there's no respect.
What was going through Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of the Republic of South Africa's head, when he did this and didn't consult with his coalition partners? Why did he do it? Is he being pressured by the ANC stalwarts that are still in his cabinet, or still prodding him and saying, listen, don't sell out to these DA white boys? What went through his head when he did this?
That's a concern, because these have been on the statute books or being discussed for a long time now. This is nothing new. These were brought up by the EFF. You know, this is very radical stuff and goes back to ideological aims of the ANC. And I think this is also just in case, you know, it kind of appeases the MH as well. You know, MK party, sorry, that Zuma's party and that. You know, we're still with you boys. You know, we're still radical. We're not, you know, we're not moderating our policies or views. So you've got a couple of bills, like the NHI bill, you know, which we talk about and has been passed. We haven't got the money, you know, and it was spoken about at Davos and how wonderful this is, and people are opposing it. They're opposing it because, number one, we haven't got the money, and also the whole healthcare system is such a mess. Government healthcare system is such a mess. The hospitals are in an appalling state, and so on. You know, get that right, and then you can introduce it. This is another one. I don't know why they did it. There's no valid reason to put it through. You know what? What are you going to do with the land? What do you want? What is your ultimate aim? And the problem is that at a time where you want moderation, you know, we want to start building on, you know what I mean? You want to start building on growth. I think you sent me that article that came from the
IRR.
Yeah. What's it, the
Institute of Race Relations?
Institute of Race Relations, yeah. You know, that came through there that said how Searle had let down his people because he'd promised to focus on growth, and this was the last thing on his mind at the moment. And we haven't heard anything, you know. I mean, he goes off to Davos and says, this is the most wonderful land, you know, you've got to come and visit. And he's got all these dreams that he puts in front of the people, all sitting in the cozy comfort of Davos, you know, where all the rich are meeting, etc. And, you know, I say, just get real, you know, come and see the real country. Don't go to a golf course in, you know, Fan Court or anything like that, or to the in Cape Town or to the waterfront and that. Go see real South Africa, you know. Go to Khayelitsha or to some of the shanty towns and see the filth and that. You know, I've got here, right here outside Corlett Drive, there are drains, sewage drains that are overflowing that have been here for some time. The stink and smell is just unreal. And it's been going on.
And that's in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, which used to be a wealthy area, yeah. David.
Yeah. No, it still is. We had the cricket here yesterday. I'm just saying, you know, you say you've got all the slush coming. You can smell it through my drains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the issues. You know, if you think I'm exaggerating, it's appalling.
I don't think you're exaggerating at all. But, David, on the expropriation a story. I know it's slightly different, but it's very, very close to home. Have a look at what happened to Zimbabwe when the farms were violently expropriated, actually. And did agricultural production go up? No, not of course. Not a hope. Tobacco production plunged after those farms were not stolen, because then maybe they were stolen in the first place. I don't know. I don't want to get into the politics.
But
have a look at that as a model.
I know, but that's the point. They say, no, we're not going to do that, but it's there. You can do it.
Yes.
You know, that's it. You can create a reason to take over a farm and for whatever reason. Yes, they say they're going to adequately compensate you. But the problem, something like this in the hands of the ANC or an ideological government, you know, I think is very dangerous and very worrying. And anybody who owns land, it's concerning. You know, they can go to you if you own a game farm, for example, and you're not exploiting it. Exploiting it meaning turning it into a tourist attraction. You know, if you're using it for yourself, yes, they can come and say to you, we're giving you a year to turn it in for tourism, otherwise we're taking it away. You know, that kind of thing. So it's concerning. Property that might have been in your family hands for years that is lying there. Yes, admittedly, but what's the benefit, you know, and who you're going to give it to and what they're going to do with it. So I think, you know, there's so many issues that could have been organized in a better country, a more of a positive growth country. People would use that land. You know, I think at the moment, no one's going to invest if they don't feel that they're going to get any kind of return. So these are not, you know, you can brush them aside, but I think they all create concerns. And the biggest concern is that this wasn't discussed with their partners. And this is just another chip away at this GNU, at the Government of National Unity, which is concerning. And they just brush, you know, they just ignore them. So anyway.
Okay, we'll see what happens. David, normally at this time, when I don't want to talk about the markets too much now, except to say that the S&P 500 is just about to break down through 6,000, and that's the March futures, down nearly 2.2%, which is a big move. And it hasn't been one of those knee-jerk reactions, David, where the market says, oh, my goodness, look at this DeepSeek thing. We sell it off, and then people say, don't worry about it, and it bounces back. It hasn't happened. When the real market opens very soon, then we'll see whether the real money will confirm this futures market trend that has been going on throughout the day. But we'll see anyway. But it is unpleasant. South African market really not doing very much. It's only just down down a little bit. Bitcoin has gone down to 100,000, was 109,000 a couple of days ago. So that's another one. I think Bitcoin will be the next one, by the way, the cryptocurrencies. But that's for another day. I want to talk, instead of football, I want to talk about Auschwitz, because BBC is covering it extensively, and they're doing a very good job. And it's a beautiful day in Poland, sunny and a crisp, sort of frosty, crisp, frosty day. But otherwise, there's nothing beautiful about it. And the question I ask, that people say to me, well, my son said to me, why did it happen? I understand why it happened. Germany lost the First World War badly, and then there were reparations and sanctions and everything imposed. And then came the Great Depression, which stemmed from the 1929 Wall Street crash. And so the privations of the German people throughout the 1930s were very deep. And so that left the door open for the demagogue, the charismatic man with the dogmatic speeches. It left the door open for Adolf Hitler to galvanize people, and he lied to them. He lied to them so badly, and they all followed him. And he said, you know, these are the people, the Jews, the Romanis, the handicapped people, the gay people, and everyone who's not Aryan, not that he's particularly Aryan himself or wasn't Aryan himself. And he got them all together, and that's when it happened. What I don't understand, I've understood why it happened, but paradoxically, I still don't know why. Why didn't he just deport these people that he didn't like? Why didn't he just say, get out of my country? Why did he have to slaughter them? Why did he have to subject them to such inhumane brutality? Why did he dehumanize them? I don't understand. Get out of my country, I can understand. Still not good, but I understand it. But the slaughter is unbelievable, David.
I think a lot of people thought it would pass. I think the other thing is that there's some horrific stories, including the United States, that turned away boats that had come from Germany. And the United States didn't want them and turned them back to Germany, where they were disembarked and, you know, were sent to camps. So, I mean, they're horrific stories. Nobody wanted the Jews. But the other thing is that don't think it was only the Germans. The French were worse in turning over their neighbors.
The
Dutch as well. In fact, today there's an exhibition of Anne Frank. Everybody knows the story of Anne Frank, who was in Holland. She was a Dutch girl, and her story, and she was turned in by neighbors, by people eventually. I mean, she'd nearly very close to the end of the war. But I mean, it's a horrific story. And Lindsay, why we have to bring it back to today is that one would have thought that that lesson, the destruction of the Jew, the genocide of 6 million Jews would have had some impact. And today we're seeing the same kind of rise of anti-Semitism, and I think that's the scary part. You know, it really is a very, very scary situation that you've suddenly seen it. You know, you start to see the same signs that were there in the early part of the 1930s within, you know, within Europe. So the amount of people that were killed. I mean, when you read the stories of how this was done systematically, and the rest of the world knew. I think that Roosevelt knew, Churchill knew. I think they had other priorities rather than bombing these camps. They knew of the existence of the camps. There was plenty of evidence. So it's in itself, it's an incredible, when I say incredible, unbelievable story of the systematic destruction of a people. We're talking 6 million people. You know, the Jewish population today, I don't know whether in the world is no more than maybe 15 million. I'm exaggerating. I don't think it even reaches 15
million. Put it into context. Which city in the world has 6 million people? I mean, London's got more. But you're wiping out a whole modern city in terms of its numbers of people. And it's almost unbelievable. I mean, I know all about it. I've learned about it. And unfortunately, school children today are not being taught about it. And there's a movement. Your wife, I know, is very involved in Holocaust history. And I'm sure she's involved in making sure that it's not forgotten. But some people don't know about it, and some people think this is nonsense. It can never be forgotten. And it's...
It's the 80th anniversary today. It's the 80th anniversary. So on this day in 1945... which is, what's the 27th of January, that's when the Russians came in and liberated Auschwitz. The other camps were liberated by some of the Americans as well. And you know, the people who liberated were just, never overcame the whole issue.
Can you imagine what they found when they got there? I've seen pictures of the Russians going into Auschwitz-Birkenau. And what they found, there is footage of it. Yeah. It was horrific, David. I wouldn't be able to get over that. People that were skin and bone, literally skin and bone.
The stories of how the Germans killed the Jews, that's when you finally got the solution. They tried to shoot them initially, dig pits and just shoot them and so on. And it became too much. They were using too many bullets. And that's where they established the final solution, which was the gas chambers. Mm-hmm. And they rounded up Jews from all over Europe, put them in cattle cars, and drove for days where there was no, you're just literally in a cattle car with very little ventilation, got to the camp, and they decided who would live and who would die. If you were a young man who could use for labor, you were okay. But women and children, another line, took their clothes off, said they were going for a shower, which was gas, took the bodies out, burnt them. So, it's when you think about it today, and as I talk to you, it's absolutely, you can't believe that's happened. And there are plenty of movies, there are plenty of stories now and books around it. But it was a very, very dark chapter in world history.
There was an interview with a woman in her 90s now, obviously an Auschwitz survivor, and she was a bit of a fidget. Everyone had to line up for inspection every morning, and she couldn't keep still. She was fidgeting around, and a woman SS officer saw her fidgeting and took her out of the line and beat her savagely to within an inch of her life just because she was fidgeting. And this woman, she said it very matter-of-factly. She said she was taught by her mother not to look the SS officer in the eye. She just said, don't let them see that you're upset. And it's so moving, horribly moving, to see and hear those stories. It's awful, David.
There are plenty of them. We have a Holocaust museum here. It's called the Genocide. That's where Linda works. And it goes through the whole, story. It also brings in Rwanda as well, where a million people were just chopped to death. So it's called the Genocide Center, but it just shows you the horrors of what man can do to other man.
Mm.
But it's a very, this led, and this is where, eventually the Jews had to find a place, and that's where you got to the establishment of Israel.
Yes.
Because who wanted the Jews after liberation? They certainly didn't want to go back to the shtetls, as you call the villages in Lithuania, in Ukraine, wherever it is. They didn't want to go back there. They had to go somewhere. And, that eventually led to the, need and establishment of Israel.
Mm.
Which is a whole other thing. But where do look? The can you imagine? Coming out of a camp and adapting to normal life, the horrors that you went through, what you witnessed, the death, the destruction, people next to you. Families were wiped out. There's so many stories of people who stayed in Germany, not only Germany. It was Ukraine. It was Lithuania. It was Latvia. It was all of them. Hungary. You name it. France, Italy, French were the worst. French just gave up their neighbors and kept the properties and everything. So,
Speaking of the worst, as we end this now, David, is the four-letter word, which is Musk. His first name is four letters, his second name is four letters, and he was on a giant screen at an AfD, Alternative for Deutschland, which is a right-wing party and bordering on being populated to a certain extent by neo-Nazis and people at certain rallies. AFD supporters wear saw stickers. And he was on a giant screen laughing and jumping around like he does because he's obviously mentally unstable. Yeah. And he was addressing them and saying, Germany, don't be ashamed of your past. And I found most extraordinary thing just a few days before the Auschwitz anniversary.
Germany has tried to, has tried to turn around and has become a very good friend of Israel and a very good friend of the Jews. But this is a right-wing party, and there's always the fear that, you know, in the right-wing are still remnants of that party, and it's still very much in people's minds. So there is a fear. I think it's a very silly move on Musk's part. You know, incredibly
stupid. It's worse than silly. It's sinister.
All it does is, he might be, he might be a very clever man and a superman, but sometimes there's a level where you just understand history and understand what you're doing. You know, and I don't think he's got that level of emotional understanding, He just, maybe there are a few things that don't connect in his brain.
He's got a high IQ probably, but he hasn't got a high EQ, and that's the fact. Okay, David, let's leave this rather sad subject. Thank you very much for your insight on three very important subjects today, exhausting day as it is. David Shapiro is from Sassam Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.